It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Welcome, everybody. I welcome you to a very special edition of Rico Bronya. You may have known, because I may have said it on the radio way too many times or on the Rico Bronya itself, but I wrote a book. I never thought I would write a book, but I did. It comes out on April 2nd. You can pre-order it right now on Amazon. It's called My Mets Bible, Scoring 30 Years of Baseball Fandom. Since I started watching baseball, since I could remember, I have scored baseball games. It's something my dad taught me to do back in 1992. And to this very day, to this very moment, 2024, I score just about every Mets game that I watch. It's an addiction, but it's also therapeutic, and it's also fun, and it's also something that all these years later, I don't regret at all. Not because I wrote a book, but because I could go back to any scorecard I've written over the last 30 plus years, instantly look at it, and it will take me right back to that game. For those of you listening that have never scored a game, maybe you love baseball, but it's never something that's interested you, I understand, but it's like an instant time warp. As soon as you look at a scorecard, as soon as I look at a scorecard, you can basically see the game right in front of you. I never thought as I was scoring games over the years that it would lead to anything other than maybe me showing it to my kids when I eventually had kids, and I did, and them looking at it for 35 seconds and saying, "What the hell is that? What's that hieroglyphics?" Luckily, my oldest son, Jet, likes to score as well. I don't know if he's going to have a full-blown obsession like his dad, but he is intrigued by it. We'll see what my three-year-old thinks of it. But about, I'd say 2 years ago, in talking to Craig Carton on the air while we were doing our show, all of a sudden an idea was inspired to publish these scorecards. Would anybody care? What would publishing the scorecards even look like? Would I make it a coffee table book, or is there something more to it? And I realized as I looked at different scorecards over the years that I could basically tell the story of my life. I could tell stories as a kid, story being on the radio, doing shows with Beningo, doing shows with Craig. And I realized that, wow, this really does tell the story of my life. So what I ended up deciding to do was to pick 81 games, and it wasn't easy to do, and 81 being the magical number of home games that a baseball team plays in their season. And as a kid growing up with season tickets, my dad having the season tickets, he spoiled the crap out of us, out of me and my sister, because, man, we would go to every freaking game. And the dream I always had with my dad was going to all 81. Never accomplished that, but I figured that was the perfect number in a book like this. If I'm going to publish 81 scorecards and tell stories of my life, the perfect number is 81. So in this book that you can pre-order right now on Amazon, I guess that's the last time I'll say it during this podcast, I picked 81 games. It was not easy. There were a lot of games that were on the cut, that almost made the cut, that didn't make the cut. If you buy this book, and I would be honored if you did, and if you don't, I totally understand, but if you buy this book and you read, what you will come across is a game, you will come across the scorecard, and you will come across a story, whether it's how I felt at that game, whether it's what was going on in my life around that game, there will be a story to be told. And what I thought I would do here on the Rico was reveal the 81 games that made it on My Mets Bible, Scoring 30 Years of Baseball Fandom. If you don't care, you can stop listening to Rico Bronya, this edition, right now. I understand. But if you're intrigued, maybe you're not even sure if you're going to get the book, but you're like, I'd like to know what 81 games made this book. Buckle up, because it's part one of the My Mets Bible game reveal. So let's start all the way at the beginning. I separated the book into different time frames, the 1990s, the 2000s, the 2010s, and the 2020s. We'll start with game number one. It was my first game. It was 1992. It was the first ever game I have recorded that I scored. So it's not the first game I've ever been to, but it's the first game that I could find that I scored.
Now, is it possible there's another game before this that I scored, but the scorecard somehow disappeared? Of course. I have to be perfectly honest. But the first game on record that I scored was a game between the New York Mets and the Pittsburgh Pirates all the way back in 1992. It was June 13th, 1992, a game the Pittsburgh Pirates would defeat the New York Mets in by a final score of 3-2. That is game number one. Game number two that made the book, you have to go back to 1994, the first Mets road game I ever went to. My dad took me to Busch Stadium back in 1994. It was not only a game the Mets won in St. Louis against the Cardinals, it was the birth of my love for Rico Bronya. And as you know, if you listen to this podcast, it's called Rico Bronya. That game back in 1994 where Rico had a monster game. He was in the middle of his torrid stretch in which he was establishing himself as an everyday player. That was a special moment. It was a special game. It was cool being in St. Louis, and it was awesome seeing Rico Bronya go on that crazy run. Game number three was a year later in 1995. It was the return to baseball. It was the Mets home opener in 1995. After the long strike, after the possibilities of replacement players, the Mets opened up the season at home against the St. Louis Cardinals, a game that they would win. I'll never forget that night. Also in 1995, me and my dad went back on the road again. We went to Chicago, Illinois, and saw Jason Isringhausen make his major league debut at Wrigley Field. I'll never forget that. It was a Met win. Izzy pitched incredibly well. That was in 1995. My next game was in 1996. It was the game where Todd Hundley set the home run record for dingers by a catcher, a game at Shea Stadium against the Atlanta Braves. 1997 was a game at Shea Stadium. It was Jackie Robinson night. That's a night I'll also never forget, specifically because my dad went to the bathroom in the second inning, and I saw him like eight innings later. I'm exaggerating, but you'll get the full details in the book. Jackie Robinson night. Bill Clinton's on the field. He makes the surprise announcement, but Selig makes the surprise announcement with Bill Clinton that the number 42 will be retired by Major League Baseball permanently from that day forward. Back in 1997. 1997 was a busy year. It also featured the very first ever regular season meeting between the New York Mets and the New York Yankees, the Dave Malicki game. I was at that game, walking in a Yankee stadium. It was a surreal night. It was a victory. Little did I know at that moment, it was all downhill from there. And that includes the finale of that three-game series in 1997. A game between the New York Mets and the New York Yankees, the rubber game of the three-game series, in which the Yankees defeated us. Tino Martinez got the game-winning hit. I skipped Regents exams back then to go to that game. And we know how it ended. The Yankees won the first ever Subway Series. My last game from 1997 was a wild, wacky victory over the Montreal Expos. It was a game where Carl Everett hit a game-tying grand slam in the bottom of the ninth inning after the Mets were down by six runs, in the ninth inning of that game. They ended up winning it on a Bernard Gilkey walk-off. And as you'll read in the book, if I'm lucky enough to have you buy it, that was a game in which I was begging my dad, we're going to make the playoffs. You got to buy those playoff tickets. As season ticket holders, they would send you a bill before you ever made the playoffs. That still goes on to this day. And then you've got to make a decision. Are you willing to really pay for playoff tickets that may never happen and let them hold your money for weeks and months at a time? That was a night in which I was convinced the Mets were making the playoffs in 1997. The next game was opening day 1998. It's one of the most memorable opening days, in my opinion, in New York Met history. It was warm outside. There was an unbelievable pitcher's duel that kept going and going and going and going. And then we finally beat the Phillies 1-0 on a game-winning hit by Alberto Castillo. That game made the book, as did another game from 1998. The Mike Piazza Mets debut. Saturday afternoon against the Milwaukee Brewers, the stunning Piazza trade. We all remember where we were when that trade went down. But do you remember the first game that was played? Mets Brewers, 1998, games in the book. All right, this is where things get depressing. 1998, regular season game, Shea Stadium, final regular season game of the year, the New York Mets against the Montreal Expos. The day Brant Brown dropped a fly ball in the outfield where the Cubs lost to the Brewers, giving the Mets a chance to be in full control of the National League wildcard race, and then they crapped the bed against the Expos that night. Also, 1998, that Friday night game, final weekend of the year in Atlanta against the Braves, the collapse is on. Jay Payton's making a brutal base running error, and the Mets lose to the Atlanta Braves. And then, of course, the finale to the 1998 season, Mets-Braves, final game of the year, they complete the collapse. For those of you too young to remember 1998, oh yeah, that's going to give you full 2007-2008 vibes with the way they completely collapsed down the stretch. In 1999, this game always is a memory of mine and had to make the book. It was the finale of the Subway Series between the Mets and the Yankees at Yankee Stadium in 1999. The Yankees won the first two games of that series. The finale was the day where Steve Phillips got rid of half of Bobby Valentine's coaches. And so Bobby Valentine and the Mets were feeling the pressure. They were not playing good baseball. And they would turn their season around that night. They beat the Yankees. They stopped Roger Clemens' win streak. They also stopped a streak Derek Jeter had for getting on base in basically every game he had played that season. Games at Yankee Stadium. Piazza takes Clemens deep. We all knew where that would go. Mets beat the Yankees to turn the season around. Another Met-Yankee game from 1999 was the infamous Matt Franco game, one of the wildest, craziest regular season games you'll ever see, capped off by Matt Franco getting the game-winning hit against Mariano Rivera. Also in 1999, one of the more underrated games from that run, Game 162, Sunday afternoon, final game of the year. Mets are in this spot where they've got to beat the Pirates. If they beat the Pirates, we know they move on to something. Possibly the National League Divisional Series, if the Brewers would help us out and beat the Cincinnati Reds. Or if we win and the Reds win, it would set up a one-game playoff. We know how that works. Mets beat the Pirates dramatically. We have to wait hours and hours, but the Reds finally beat the Brewers, and it sets up a one-game playoff for the National League wild card. And guess what? That game's in it too. The very next night, 1999, Al Leiter against Steve Parris. Al Leiter delivers that epic performance, and the Mets are going to the playoffs for the first time in my lifetime. We follow that up with Game 1 of the 1999 National League Divisional Series, a game that started well after 11 o'clock, a game that featured Randy Johnson on the mound for the Arizona Diamondbacks, and featured Edgardo Alfonso getting the game-winning hit against Bobby Schwenard, a grand slam in the ninth inning. Another game from that epic series against the Diamondbacks, the finale, Game 4 of the Divisional Series at Shea Stadium, where Matt Manti is on the mound, Todd Pratt is in the batter's box, Pratt hits the fly ball to center field, Steve Finley jumps, he misses it. Mets beat the Diamondbacks, advance to the National League Championship Series. Moving on to that NLCS, who could forget the Grand Slam single? Robin Ventura in that epic Game 5 of the 1999 NLCS with the ring pelting my scorebook that night. That game is in the book, as is the finale, the depressing, dramatic finale, Game 6 of the 1999 NLCS, in which the Mets put themselves in a huge hole. They came back. They had multiple leads. And then, of course, Kenny Rogers walks Andrew Jones, and the Atlanta Braves are on to face the Yankees in the World Series. Then we move to a brand new decade, the 2000s, and we started off with the Mets and the Cubs in Japan. They played two games to open up that season in Japan, the opener and then Game 2 of the series that started at 5 a.m. If you were a kid growing up, what the hell were you going to do? You're going to skip school? Miss first period? You know what I did. I missed first period. And the game I picked of the two games was the win, the Benny Agbayani Grand Slam. That was actually Game 2 of that Japanese series with the Chicago Cubs. Then a game is in the book that was actually never played. It was 2000 Mets-Yankees, the finale of that three-game series at Yankee Stadium. It was a game in which a few innings was played, so there is a scorecard. And then the rains came, and the game actually got rained out. It's what led to the two-stadium doubleheader. But even the briefness of that Met-Yankee game featured a lot of memories and a lot of stories, including Robin Ventura imitating Mike Piazza and sliding on the tarpaulin. I was in the building for that. It's still etched in my memory. So that's a game that's, it's kind of weird. It's a scorecard. It's a game. There was no result. And officially, it never happened. Also in 2000, the 10-run inning. One of the most ridiculous moments, epic moments, epic games in New York Mets regular season history. The rally against the Atlanta Braves, the Mike Piazza home run, all on fireworks night in 2000. Also in 2000, I mentioned the two-stadium doubleheader. Both games in the two-stadium doubleheader Subway Series in this book. Doc Gooden returns to Shea Stadium. Mets lose to the Yankees. The capper, Roger Clemens, beating Mike Piazza in the head. Game two of that series. Also in 2000, we have the clincher. That's right, the Mets won the wild card that year, and they clinched at home against the Atlanta Braves. The irony of that is it actually occurred the day after the Atlanta Braves clinched, believe it or not. So Mets-Braves, the clincher from 2000 in this book. Then you've got, what else do we have? Oh, yeah, here we go. The postseason. Who the hell could forget that? It was an epic run in 2000, that postseason, including game two of the divisional series against the San Francisco Giants. That's when Armando Benitez taught us to never trust him. He gave up the home run to JT Snow. The Mets rallied back and won to even up the divisional series at 1-1. The following game, game three of the divisional series against the Giants, that was a classic. That was the Benny Agbayani game winner in extra innings. That's in the book. And, of course, the clincher. Bobby Jones offering one of the great pitching performances in the history of the New York Mets franchise, a one-hit complete game shutout to send us to the NLCS against the St. Louis Cardinals. We will have game five of the NLCS in this book. That's the clincher. That sent the Mets to the World Series. It was a giant party at Shea Stadium that night. We get to the World Series. We get to the Subway World Series. Every game from the World Series needed to be in my Mets Bible, as painful as it is. Game one, we certainly know what happened there. The Armando Benitez versus Paul O'Neill at bat, Timo Perez missing third. I had quite an experience being at Yankee Stadium by myself that night. More on that in the book. Game one, World Series, Mets-Yankees. Game two, Mets-Yankees World Series. I think best remembered for Roger Clemens throwing a bat at Mike Piazza. I was 17 at the time. I was in the upper deck. I get into full detail in the book. I lost my freaking mind. And I'm surprised I did not get my ass kicked that night in screaming and yelling at Mike Piazza. And Roger Clemens, but mostly Roger Clemens. I was not angry at Mike Piazza that night for not charging the mound. That kind of started to get into my brain as the hours went by. I was angry at Roger. Son of a bitch is throwing a bat at my best player. Then you've got game three of the World Series, the New York Met victory, the one victory in that series. Game four, best remembered for Derek Jeter taking the first pitch against Bobby Jones and spanking it over the fence. And of course, the end to the whole thing, game five. It all ended. Game five, New York Yankees winning the World Series at Shea Stadium. The pain. In 2001, I returned back from living in Maryland. I was not at the Mike Piazza game. In fact, at the end of the book, My Mets Bible, I've got the lost games, the impactful games in Met history that I did not score for whatever reason. More on that at the end of the book. But I did miss the return of baseball to New York that night. But I was there for the rest of the series, including the Sunday game, in which the Mets had a real chance to get back in the race in the National League East, and Armando Benitez decided to do what he did best, which was cause us pain and suffering. Opening day 2003, the debut of Tom Glavine. The New York Mets got absolutely motorboated by the Chicago Cubs on that freezing cold day. Opening day 2003 was a disaster. Speaking of opening day, jump 2 years later to 2005. Opening day against the Cincinnati Reds, a game I watched with my scorecard at a bar in New York City. That was Pedro Martinez's Met debut, Carlos Beltran's Met debut, and Braden Looper flushed it all down the toilet in about 12 seconds as the Mets blew it. They blew game one of 162 against the Cincinnati Reds opening day 2005. 2005 also featured one of the great pound-for-pound regular season games I've ever seen, and I included that in this book. That was a regular season game against the Angels of Anaheim that ended on a walk-off home run by Cliff Floyd. 2005 featured one hell of a baseball game, that's for sure. Also in this book, we jump to the magical year of 2006, and including the magical night where the Mets clinched the National League East, 2006 against the Florida Marlins, a game in which I skipped out on work, and also I quit my job. I quit my job because I could not miss the New York Mets in the playoffs. More info on that in my Mets Bible. 2006 also featured Elimination Day. That was the day the New York Mets eliminated the LA Dodgers in the NLDS. But Met fans know it as not just the day that the Mets eliminated the Dodgers, but the day the Detroit Tigers eliminated the New York Yankees. Elimination Day, a famous moment in history if you are a New York Met fan. Then we jump to the painful. Game 7, 2006, National League Championship Series. Need I say more? I refer you back to our rewatch of Game 7 of the 2006 NLCS or our sit-down interview on the Killer Series when we talked to Adam Wainwright. In 2007, the Mets played a game in Philadelphia against the Phillies. It was the first time Bedingo and I went on a Mets road trip, and it also was an ominous sign about what was about to happen in 2007. It was the first sign of a Met choke job. Mets-Phillies, finale of a series at the Vet, and the Mets lost, and the choke was on. Also in 2007 was a game in Washington, D.C., in which I hit the road right after my show with Joe to try to turn the Mets season around. I thought if I could be there in person in Washington, maybe the mojo would turn around. And I was right, because the Mets beat the Washington Nationals that night. And because of that, my bosses at WFAN, after I drove all the way back to New York, said, "You got to keep this going. You should go to Florida," which was the next stop on their road trip. And I went to Florida, except it did not work out as well. So my next game from 2007 was a road game in Florida against the Marlins, in which the Mets lost in absolutely brutal fashion when Billy Wagner got hurt and could not pitch and close that game out. Also in 2007 was game 161, the John Main one-hitter. He had a no-hitter into the eighth inning. Jose Reyes is fighting with Miguel Olivo. The Mets are saving their season in game 161. It was a blowout against the Marlins, but maybe one of the most memorable blowouts in Met history. And then, of course, game 162. The completion of the 2007 collapse. How can that scorecard and that story not be in this book? In 2008, it was like we were watching a replay of our lives. I include game 161. That's Johan Santana on 3 days rest with a torn meniscus. Again, the Mets saving their season. And then the closing of Shea Stadium. Game 162. The Mets lose another brutal pennant race. The Mets say goodbye to Shea Stadium. The final day at Shea, I was with my dad, I was with my sister, and as you'll see in the book, I was with the legendary Steve Summers. 2009, I did a feature on the opening of Citi Field. Now, the only scorecard that's in the book is game one against the San Diego Padres, but I also talk about the games against the Boston Red Sox that opened up Citi Field, the beginning of the Citi Field era. Also in 2009, me, Beningo, and Greg Giannotti went on the road. We went to L.A., and there are quite a few stories in this book from that trip, including an NFL player's genitalia, a woman named Tatiana, Vin Scully telling us that Omer Santos is named after a penis, and me being so devastated by the loss to the Los Angeles Dodgers that I would not speak. I was so fuming over that brutal loss. That's where Ryan Church missed third base, that for hours I could not communicate until Greg Giannotti did something so ridiculously funny that it got me out of my negative trance. Could read about that in my Mets Bible. Also in 2009, the Omer Santos game at Fenway Park. I was in the building for that classic, but I was also in the building for the next game in this book, the Luis Castillo game, where, and I've talked about this on the air, I was so frustrated by the way that game ended, I ditched my lifelong best friend Chad at Yankee Stadium and said, I can't drive you home. He was a Yankee fan. I was upset. Ugly, ugly scene. In the next edition of the My Mets Bible Reveal, we move to 2010, and I tell you the rest of the games that made the book. It's the big My Mets Bible baseball game reveal. Thank you very much for listening and downloading the reveal edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.